Chapter 9. The City Lost. She raced through the streets of Luskin. She tried to stay to the shadows because she knew that danger was all about her. It had all been going so well. The city had settled under its new conquerors, and the streets, though not yet quiet, were beginning to show signs of normalcy. In the tavern, the talk had been light and flowing freely. But then she had been recognized. She was sure of it. She had noted the look on the face of the man hurriedly leaving. Despite her fears, Bonnie Charlie didn't run straight to the secret entrance to Illusk, the ruins beneath Luskin. She had to make sure that she was clear of pursuit, that no eyes were on her, before she got to the cemetery near the bridge to Closeguard Isle and the false grave that brought her to the secret descending stairway. Just as she was beginning to hope she had outrun any pursuers, the woman turned a corner into an alleyway and nearly ran into a pair of gnolls, each fully 2 feet taller than she. They weren't part of the pursuit, she hoped, for she had clearly surprised them more than they had surprised her. She hadn't the time to figure it out. The woman threw herself into the nearest burly gnoll, her dagger coming out, pommel tight against her ribs, as she used her weight to insert the blade deep into the gnoll's belly. She pulled the dagger out and shoved the wounded creature away, then slashed across as the second tried in vain to draw its sword, scoring a lucky cut across the beast's throat, her arm just getting past the snarling creature's hyena-like face and snapping maw. Down it went, gurgling, but the other was howling loudly and was being answered by others not far away. She ran down the alleyway, zigzagging this way and that when she heard renewed pursuit behind her. She grabbed at any loose items, trash, a broken cart, an empty cask, as she passed, throwing them down behind her to impede the pursuers. Bonnie Charlie stumbled in surprise as a javelin flew by her head, skipping off the wall of the building to her left. She glanced back as she caught herself against another cask, and her heart sank, and she knew she was doomed, for the lane behind her was full of the rampaging humanoids. She stumbled out the far end of the alley, gripping her right shoulder where another javelin had clipped her. She knew she was about to be killed, or worse, knew they were right behind her. She even cried out as she turned, flashing her small weapon in desperation, and it took her a long moment to decipher the sight before her. Darkness filled the alleyway. Not the night, but true darkness. Magical darkness. She heard the yells of the gnolls, then the click of crossbows, then fewer howls and more grunts, the slide of a sword, as if against a metal breastplate, a yelp of pain. One gnoll spilled out of the alley before her, stumbling, bleeding, yes, covered in its own blood. It jerked weirdly once and again, and it took Bonnie Charlie a few moments to realize the two new wounds were from heavy crossbow bolts. Before the dying beast fell, a drow rushed out of the darkness, grabbed it, and yanked it back in, his sword going to murderous work, before he and his brutish victim disappeared from Bonnie Charlie's astonished gaze. The drow came back out, his face at least. "To Illusk now, you fool," he scolded. Bonnie Charlie didn't need to be told twice.
"I think it obvious that your trip was less successful than we had hoped." Kimoriel Oblodra greeted Bonnie Charlie when she returned to the secret hideaway of Bragan de Earth, deep in the ruins beneath the city of Luskin.
"I got some information," the woman replied, her nervousness showing in the sweat on her brow as she stood before the coldly analytical and surprisingly dangerous drow psionicist.
"And now you have become useless to our cause, because you were clearly recognized," Kimoriel stated.
"Those who recognized her are dead, however." Came another voice, another drow, entering the small room of Bragan de Earth's co-leader beside a tall, red-haired man who appeared to be human. Bonnie Charlie was more comforted by the arrival of Braylon Jonquet, a drow scout and a fellow of an easy manner, than of the other person, who she knew to be no human. He was Beniago Kurth, the front for Bragan de Earth in the city, not only a drow, but a member of the ruling house of the Underdark city of Menzo Baranzon. Beniago had not been threatening to her any more than any of the others, and less so than Kimoriel, surely. But there was something about him, some easy danger, that had the woman on edge at the mere sight of him.
You are certain of this? Kimuriel asked.
We had scouts all about, Braylon answered. It was a gang of ugly gnolls, nothing more. And they're too bloodthirsty to flee and too stupid to know they should flee.
I agree with his assessment, Beniago added, and he fixed a stern gaze on Bonnie Charlie that had the little hairs on her arms tingling with fear. She got lucky.
Bonnie Charlie steeled herself against the tall man's withering glare. She decided then not to mention the man in the tavern who she was sure had recognized her. As soon as she finished that thought, however, Kimuriel chuckled, and she knew that she had indeed just told him exactly that. The psionicist said nothing, however, and even nodded a bit at the woman.
He asked me to find out some things, eh? Bonnie Charlie said defiantly, hoping that she was reading Kimuriel correctly. And I went, didn't I? Put your angry eyes away, mate.
That brought a snort from Braylon. Beniago's only angry because he still looks like a human, the scout said lightheartedly. Though between us, clever lady, he was much uglier before the transformation. Bonnie Charlie returned his smile and was much relieved by Braylon's tone.
Well, what did you learn?
Beniago asked, ignoring the jibes.
Not here, said Kimuriel,
and he started out of the room, the other three following. Bonnie Charlie paid close attention as the four walked the ways of Illusk. The Dark Elf had built formidable defenses here, and the preparedness and deadliness of their many sentries could not be questioned. Bonnie Charlie wanted to know them all. If she was captured up above, her knowledge of this place might prove her salvation. And what did she owe the drow, anyway?
You owe us your life and nothing less.
Kimuriel walked up beside her and whispered in her ear, almost as soon as the question had crossed her mind. The woman's legs went weak. Wolfgar had warned her so many times about this one, about how he could enter her mind with ease and read her every thought. He had just read her thoughts about the man in the tavern, obviously, and now she had slipped again. Bonnie Charlie had no way to defend against that.
No, he whispered. You don't.
She chewed her lip as Kimuriel sidled away, taking up the lead once more as he guided them into the deeper recesses of the Bregendierth position, heading for the room the woman knew best, the room where Wulfgar waited. The barbarian was not alone, but with Priestess Dabne, one of the very few women Bonnie Charlie had seen in the drow band. Dabne glanced at Kimuriel and gave a nod, then launched into the chant of a divine spell, a dreamer of healing, obviously, or Wolfgar took it in with the satisfied expression of an old codger sitting on a dock inhaling a cloud of fine pipeweed smoke.
Shall I take my leave? Dabne asked.
No need, Kimuriel replied. He turned to Bonnie Charlie.
Tell them what you have learned.
Bonnie Charlie paused before she began, noting the exact words of Kimuriel.
Yes, tell them, for Kimuriel already knew it. All of it, perhaps more of it than Bonnie Charlie herself could recall consciously.
She wished she was back at sea, bouncing on the waves in pursuit of a merchant galley.
They're all behind the new High Captain, the woman said, clearing her head of those far-off dreams. All the ships, Rethnor, Baram is no surprise. Beniago said. Every high captain of Ship Baram has been willing to move whatever way looks safest for Ship Baram. Likely that one was opening wide his doors for the invaders before they even got into port.
All of them, Bonnie Charlie said. High Captain Brevenden's taken your seat, Beniago. Ship Curf's now Ship Margaster.
A Waterdavian noble family, Kimuriel noted.
Taking Luskan out in the open? Asked Braylon Jonquet.
That seems foolhardy.
Or confident, Beniago added.
That is a common way of thinking among thieves and insurgents, Kimuriel explained. When you steal what you want, claim it loudly, and dare anyone to do something to take it away.
A dare I'd take, Wolfgar remarked.
The city's all fallen in line behind him, Bonnie Charlie went on. Even the gnolls that came in with Brevenden's fleet are given free run of the city.
Why?
Wolfgar asked, climbing to his feet and stretching the stiffness and pain out of his shoulders.
Why would they do that?
Brevenan led the attack and slaughtered many, sure. Yet half of Luskin or more seems to have surrendered without a fight. Why?
Because he don't have dark skin, Bonnie Charlie answered bluntly, before the others could. That drew long stares from the drow in the room, but ones more of curiosity than animosity.
It seems that my disguise did not fool them then, Beniago agreed with a laugh. A human in the captain's chair in appearance, but still they knew that the power behind Luskin these last years has been drow in origin. Now they have a human Waterdavian lord to call High Captain, someone who looks like most of them, someone they think grand and beautiful.
Such primitive emotions are the trough of despots, Kimuriel said.
So Brevenden's taken Closeguard Isle and ship Kurth as his home. The other ships have rallied behind him, and Gromph won't let the Host Tower do anything against him, said Braylon Jonquet.
Is that it, then? Is it time for Bregan de Earth to move on?
All eyes went to Kimuriel, the undisputed leader of the band, with Jarlaxle nowhere to be found.
No, Kimuriel answered. No. Let them settle in and grow comfortable for a bit longer, then we strike, and often. The facade of strength is impressive, unless one understands the weakness behind it. A leader assuming control, as Brevenden Margaster has done, has also created great enmity with many powerful people who haven't the courage to confront him. So we will make him mortal, figuratively and literally, and let the support for his marauders be shown as the true facade. But the option behind Brevenden will remain
us, Braylon argued.
Or him, Kimuriel answered, motioning toward Wulfgar.
You ask me to be a puppet ruler for Bregan de Earth? The proud barbarian retorted as soon as the shock wore off.
I ask you to help us rid Luskin of this demon-backed invasion, Kimuriel answered. In fact, I insist upon it.
Aye, and I've agreed to that part, but I've no desire to rule a city.
You won't.
Or to pretend to rule a city,
Wulfgar clarified in a determined tone that brooked no debate. We will find a path to satisfy both our needs, the barbarian heard in his head, and he tried to keep his expression unchanged, with no hint of the revulsion inspired by Kimuriel's telepathic intrusion evident. Get out and go south, Kimuriel instructed Braylon. Relate the news of Luskin and learn the events and status of Gontalgrim. Stay underground and through the tunnels until you are well out of the city. Take this, he handed Braylon a small whistle set on a silver chain, and take with you any others you deem necessary to facilitate the mission. Braylon stared at the strange whistle for a moment, nodding, which let Kimuriel know that the man recognized it. And why should he not? For Jarlaxle had long worn a similar whistle about his neck. He looped the chain over his head and looked up.
Any I deem necessary, Priestess Dabney?
Kimuriel considered it for a moment, then replied, No, not her. She remains here. I may have need of her. Should I be honored? Dabney asked lightly, with a hint of jest, a hint of sarcasm. Kimuriel was having none of it, and showed her as much with his cold expression. Honored? He answered. No. Perhaps you should be afraid. Dabney started to respond, but held back.
I am to go all the way to Gontalgrim? Braylon Jonquet asked, obviously trying to change the subject.
If you must, Kimuriel replied. But take great care, and if you encounter something unexpected, then use the whistle. He paused for just a heartbeat. Something unexpected and dramatic, he clarified. Do not waste my time unless you are certain that your call will not prove to be a waste of my time.
Couldn't you just go to Gontalgrim and be back in short order?
Wulfgar asked Kimuriel. Do not pretend to understand that which you do not, the Psionicist was quick to respond. There are costs to every action, and I have more pressing needs for my powers than to run as courier between the cities.
And here?
Beniago asked, and Kimuriel knew from his tone that he was simply trying to change the subject before it got out of hand, intercepting a likely rude retort from the often crass barbarian.
Are we to stay hidden below?
or should we commence with some actions to make Brevenden's reign less than simple?
Like? Kimoriel asked.
There are lots of dead gnolls in an alley, Beniago said with a wry grin. Seems a promising beginning for a resistance.
What is the strongest ship, other than Brevenden's ship Kurth? Kimoriel asked. Rethnor?
Easily.
Nibble at them, the psionicist instructed. Wound them, but only a bit, around the edges, and make it look like the new ship Margaster's doing.
Then go to ship Baram and make them realize that ship Margaster will eliminate any and all competitors,
Beniago interrupted.
Kimoriel smiled and nodded. Soon after, Wulfgar somehow found himself alone in the room with Kimoriel, something he never much enjoyed.
As we discussed when first the city fell, Kimoriel told him, if all goes well, you may get one strike. That is your only chance.
And if all doesn't go well?
Then you are almost certainly a dead man.
My only chance,
Wulfgar echoed, emphasizing Kimoriel's use of a singular pronoun.
I am almost certainly a dead man. What of Kimoriel? He asked,
just because he wanted to hear the drow's derisive snort. Whatever happened here in Luskan, Wulfgar understood clearly that the stakes were higher for him than for this strange drow, and likely higher than for any of Jarlaxle's mercenary band. Brigandierth always seemed to play things that way.
One more thing for you to consider as we await our opportunity, said Kimoriel. Your friend, this pirate woman, Bonnie Charlie.
What of her?
Wulfgar asked with a shrug, and he was surprised by how much he privately cared.
She was recognized in the city, but she chose not to share that. You should make it very clear to her that if she even thinks of betraying us, I will know. And if I know, again, then she will find a worse fate than any creature of your surface world could ever inflict upon her.
Even a mere thought?
Wulfgar asked.
People have many thoughts that they will not act upon. Would any friend remain a friend if he looked into the mind of a companion at the wrong moment?
I can separate whimsy from true threat. Whimsy I accept, to a point.
You can't just keep your opinions to yourself. Is that why Kimoriel has no friends?
You speak as if that is a bad thing, Kimoriel replied and left the room.
Wulfgar blew out a long sigh, thinking that he would indeed have a long talk with Bonnie Charlie. As much as he hated many of the drow, and Kimoriel in particular, he understood that he and Bonnie Charlie had to throw in with Brigandierth fully if they were to have any chance of surviving this nightmare. Only Kimoriel, or Jarlaxle if he returned, had any hope of getting Gromf to open the portals to Gontalgrim, and without that, Wulfgar had little expectation that he would ever see his friends again. For he was fairly certain of what Braylon and the others would find in the south, a land no doubt brimming with powerful enemies and monsters far beyond him.
Yes, he needed to speak with Bonnie Charlie, and immediately. Again, Wulfgar had to pause and consider how much he cared about whether or not this woman survived. He wasn't in love with her or anything like that, he told himself stubbornly, dismissing the notion before even entertaining it. But she had proven a loyal companion, and that seemed a virtue in scarce supply in the City of Sails.
Lolth is with her,
Gromf replied, when the psionicist cornered him in his extra-dimensional mansion within the host tower of the Arcane later that same day.
Matron Jindia Malarn would not have come this far, would not be commanding such an array of demons and vagabonds without the blessing of Lolth.
Many with the blessing of Lolth have lost before, Kimoriel replied, even in Menzo Berenzon.
And if those victors were not also in the blessing of Lolth, what happened to them, I wonder?
Gromf replied.
Why are you afraid?
Why are you not?
The simple question set Kimoriel back on his heels a bit, which was highly unusual.
And why do you care so much?
Gromf pressed.
I work with Brigandierth.
Brigandierth will survive. You can be gone from the city, from this part of the world if needed, in short order. Jarlaxle survived the centuries because none are better at navigating such a web than he. I expect he hopes as much for the man he named as a co-leader of his coveted band.
Camoriel hardly heard the words, shaking his head through it all.
Look at yourself, Gromps scolded. You care. Camoriel Oblodra. And how remarkable that any Oblodra or Odran cares. Have you gone soft, then? Have you abandoned your sole goal in life to find the one eternal truth along with those tentacle-waggling illithids?
Camoriel wanted to deny his words, to deny him, but his responses sounded without conviction.
Have you become enamored of the flesh, Camoriel? Gromph asked more seriously. Have you found within your emotionless mind a bit of love for that which we mere mortals covet?
You have felt the power of the hive mind unleashed, the psionicist reminded him, for Gromph had been with him when they had channeled the awesome psionic power of the entire illithid collective into the weapon Ivanel had made of Drizzt in order to destroy Demogorgon.
And it was glorious, the former archmage admitted. I hope to find it again, but to do so, I know that I have to live long enough to be worthy of it. And living long enough, I expect, means staying on the right side of Lady Lolth's anger. Matron Jindia came here with the full blessing of Lolth, of that I am sure. Two retrievers, Camoriel, two! When have you ever heard of such a thing?
He had a point, one that was hard for Camoriel to ignore. Retrievers were a great gift from the lower planes, a magnificent construct rarely created because of the effort and cost. Camoriel did care deeply about the outcome of all this, but his concern wasn't based on any love or desire. No, Camoriel was angry, outraged even. That silent confession struck him hard. When had he ever let his anger overrule his sensibilities? Even when Matron Mother Ivanel Bayenri had dropped his home, his family, his mother, into the Claw Rift, obliterating all that was House Oblodra, Camoriel had tempered his rage beneath his good judgment. He had fully joined with Jarlaxle, with Bregan the Earth, which served as a strong ally of that same Matron Mother Bayenri. Many times he had thought of revenge, and many times he had put those desires aside, exacting what little punishment he might secretly inflict upon the Bayenris whenever he could, but never anything risky. It had always been more of an amusement, a little bit of whimsy, than anything important. Now, though, he burned with anger. Now he wanted Brevendon taken down in no uncertain terms, the demon within the Margaster crushed before him. He had told himself that his plan, dangerous but possible, was for the good of Bregan de Earth, and there was perhaps enough truth in that for him to continue the self-deception. Not at this moment, though. At this moment, Camoriel realized there was much more here, much more personal anger driving him. He wasn't certain why. He was missing something, he thought, some element right there before him that he had not connected, a memory deep in his mind, a hint he had heard elsewhere, something. If you do not renew the flow of magic to Gontalgrim and the Primordial, the beast will escape and lay waste to the region, he said to Gromph one last time.
And if I do as you ask, I will be picking sides, and that side will not be the one favored by Lolth.
Jarlaxle is in there, in Gontalgrim, as far as I can discern.
Then Jarlaxle will have to be clever, or Jarlaxle will be dead.
Camoriel stood and stared for a while longer, but he really couldn't do anything, he understood. He was more powerful than Gromph in psionics, but if he tried to use any to convince Gromph, he would be facing off against one of the most powerful wizards in the world. He wanted to satisfy his anger, but he didn't want to make it go away by dying. He returned to Illusk and the secret Drow enclave. Gromph would not be swayed.